The buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison, Dawson Wise, and Jace Brown joining you on a Monday live from Knoxville, Tennessee. NBA playoffs going on. The Vols get a big series clinching win on Saturday after a tough doubleheader on Friday. Also, the Tom Brady roast was last night. I had no idea that was going on.
I didn't either.
Until I woke up this morning.
I didn't see anything about it until I heard Kevin Hart just rambling on stage about something. So I mean.
Who promoted that, though? Because I never saw a thing for it.
Netflix, I think.
Yeah, I think it was Netflix.
So I know it was on Netflix, and I know it was live, and I guess they're trying to do more live events because I know they're having the Jake Paul and
Mike Tyson fight.
That's live on Netflix, too. But I had no idea about some roast.
Yeah.
And, it was in a big arena, and they had, stars were out, and it looks like comedy's back. Probably can't mention a couple of things that were said on terrestrial radio.
But Antonio Brown's a big fan of it. So.
He doesn't have many brain cells, so I'm sure he's a fan of anything. big hour ahead of us today. We'll talk about the Mile High Meltdown in Denver in the Minnesota and Nugget series. And as always, we'll give our best bets at the end of the hour. But we begin with this. First things first, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. And today's first things first topic is the Vols swamp the Gators. Number three going into the weekend, now the number one team in the nation, Tennessee, exploded for 11 runs in the sixth inning to blow open a close game and secure its seventh straight SEC series win, toppling Florida 16-3 in seven innings on Saturday night at Condren Family Ballpark. With the win, the Vols also recorded their fourth consecutive series win in Gainesville, something that has never been done in program history. Hunter Inslee, big day for him, led the way with UT's offense with a huge outburst, three-run producing hits, finishing with a pair of two-run doubles and a three-run homer for a career seven RBIs on the day. Inslee's career night started with a big two-out double in the top of the fourth to plate two runs and get the big orange on the board, cutting their deficit to one. The redshirt junior center fielder fouled off their 3-2 pitches before roping the ninth pitch of the at-bat off base, off the wall, in left field to score Billy Amick and Dean Curley. Tennessee built off that momentum and took control of the game with its 11-run sixth inning. Talk about getting the offense going. They were able to get it going on Saturday. After five more runs had already crossed the plate, Inslee provided the exclamation point on the inning with a three-run homer to right field to give UT a 13-3 lead. Christian Moore and Blake Burke hit back-to-back home runs in the top of the seventh to provide a little bit more insurance for the run rule win. Moore had another productive game at the dish with three hits, two runs, and two RBIs. Curley also had a really solid night with two RBI knocks and a team-leading three-run scored. Nate Snead was the guy on the mound, and he was dominant, striking out a career-high seven batters while allowing just one unearned run on two hits and five innings of relief to pick up the win and improve to 8-1 on the year. Talk about a transfer coming in and making some impact. The Gators jumped out to an early 2-0 lead, which we saw on Friday in the doubleheader in the second game on a Ty Evans two-run homer in the bottom of the first. But the Vols, from that point on, held control and come out with a big win to clinch the series in a 2-1 decision. Now are firmly at second in the SEC standings, tied with Arkansas at 17-7 apiece. Kentucky still the leader at 18-6. We'll dive more into the SEC standings here in a minute. But look, this is a unique week, a unique situation. You play a doubleheader on Friday. You get the first win, which I thought was very important, going on the road, setting the tone. And Florida got kind of settled into things. Maybe you could say the humidity and playing back-to-back games kind of threw off the Tennessee players, especially not used to practicing and playing in those conditions. But on Saturday, when you needed a win, Tennessee was able to get it, and they got it with an exclamation point, 16 runs. We talked about the offense. It's kind of been not sputtering, but has not been playing up to the par that Tennessee has set this season. And they come out with a performance on Saturday like they have in these series-clinching games. Tennessee has done well this year on Sundays, in this instance Saturday, and coming out with a win, making sure they're putting their best baseball on the field in a game-clinching situation. They did it yesterday. The bats were great, and I thought the pitching outside of, you know, early on in game two, I thought the pitching all weekend was really good. You know, we talked about kind of how to prevent Jack Caglione from becoming a big impact and getting this very talented Florida team going. And in that first matchup, Caglione didn't get a hit until his fourth at bat. You know, so I thought they did a really good job containing him. Florida was never really able to get the bat rolling offensively outside of the early parts of game two. I thought a lot of good things from this weekend. Guys, what were your takeaways?
Well, the number one, like, overarching takeaway should be this team is going to be just fine. We kind of were stressing a little bit. We're not hitting the panic button, but get your hands away from the panic button. You know, everybody on social media, get your hands off the panic button. We're going to be fine. This team's going to be okay. They reminded us this weekend, still have fight. They still have the drive to win. They can win the big game, the big, you know, slugfest games. They can win the tight games. And they won one of each, really, this weekend, if you want to think about it that way. Secondly, welcome back bottom of the order. It had been a while since we'd seen these guys kind of pull through and be a 1-9 punch. This weekend they were a 1-9 punch, especially yesterday, or Saturday, I guess, in this case. You know, guys like Cal Stark. Cal Stark had a great Saturday, I thought. Guys at the bottom of the lineup, Dalton Bargo comes in as DH in game two. I thought he had a pretty good weekend. Switching it up, giving him different looks. Robin Villeneuve finally comes back. He comes off the bench. A little bit of a tough at-bat in his look, but giving them different looks I thought was a really cool strategy and kind of, you know, motivates these guys. And as such, bottom of the order, the, I think, 6-9 hitters, 7-9 hitters hit 7-14 in Saturday's game.
Yeah.
As compared to, I think, going in, they were like 2-32, 4-32, something like that. It was not good in the first two games. 7-14 on Saturday. We'll take that all day. And then the pitching, doing its thing. I mean, it's nothing we don't expect. Early mishaps on Saturday. Game two was rough with Drew Beam. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Snead, Cannell, Sechrist even, he got bumped a little bit, but, you know, held his own for the most part, as well as Causey and Stamos on the first game on Friday. They were outstanding. We talked about that a little bit on the show.
Uh-huh.
Despite, you know, a couple of rough moments, are really another good pitching weekend. They're continuing to just get better and better.
Yeah, I guess overarching, you know, seeing how Texas A&M and both Arkansas both lost their series, I mean, you know, who else would be the number one team in the country right now? I think outside of a couple throwing errors here and there, and, you know, with Billy Amick being a little bit still sort of a question mark out there, I don't think there's a more solid lineup 1-9 in the country. And, you know, with the stepping up of the pitching this weekend, I'm not sure if you can say that there's very many pitching staffs that are much better than the Vols as well. I think on Saturday, Sechrist, you know, getting roughed up a little bit, but still was able to provide some quality innings and give some guys a different look before Snead going in there and really taking over that ball game. It was really good to see that tandem continuing to work in, I guess, that swing game or that clinch game scenario. And just, you know, from the beginning, it felt like Inslee knew what he was doing all weekend. I keep ragging on him being, you know, every time there's a step up in pitching, he seems to, you know, step up into that limelight and want the moment. And he did just that on Saturday against Caglione, who's, again, their best offensive player and best defensive player. He made it happen against him, and throughout the rest of the lineup, it was great as well. And beyond that, it was just another solid weekend for the Vols. You can't really put anybody else above them just from how they've been playing recently. And I guess one knock on Arkansas is, you know, you did what Arkansas couldn't. So, I mean, you know, you got to take some positives where you can get them. It was just an all-around great weekend. The pitching looked not lights out most of the weekend.
A couple key stats from the game. The Vols posted their fifth run rule win during SEC play this season, including their third on the road with Saturday's victory. UT's 11-run sixth inning was tied for its most runs scored in an inning this season, matching the 11 it scored in the third inning of a 16-0 victory over ETSU on February 21st. And kind of going back to how good this offense was, I mean, again, this is a closeout game. You need to put your best foot forward. And the offense was not only able to get going early, but they were able to put an exclamation mark when Florida kind of had a shot to keep it a game, right? Tennessee was able to put an exclamation mark out there and put this team away on the road. What does that kind of performance say about the bats in a situation like this?
Oh, I mean, the bats are great. It was huge. This is as good as the bats have been since at least game one against Missouri. I think almost further back than that.
Yeah.
This is the potential of this lineup as a 1-9 punch. I talked about it early in the year and before the season that this had the potential to be a 1-9 lineup where every guy could get on base. Every guy could get a big hit. And this is the potential of that lineup. That big inning, you saw exactly what this lineup can do. They can do damage. If everybody's hitting the baseball, they can do damage. And if they can settle in, which they hadn't the past week or so, they can do serious things.
Yeah.
And they showed again why they're rated so highly, why they're so dangerous, why pitchers need to continue to take them seriously. Mm-hmm. You got a glimpse of the clutch hitting again. I know we talked about that as a key. You finally got guys on base and converted that. We talked about it. We've been harping on it since last weekend. Just the fact you were 3-for-15 with runners in scoring position in last week's closeout game. Now you won the game. That's still an alarming stat.
Yeah.
And then obviously runners in scoring position against Lipscomb as well. You struggled there. You got it in that big inning. I mean, it felt like a revolving door. I think you sent 13 batters to the plate in the sixth inning. So that's what you needed out of the offense is clutch hitting. Hunter Ensley was a clutch hit machine.
Yeah.
He had a heck of a Saturday. Two-run doubles and then the home run to put the exclamation point on the game. Big night for him. You got to shout that out. We needed to see what they could do if they just quit panicking, stop striking out when there's guys on base. That's what they can do right there. And then just a couple notable players. Good to see Simo get back into form.
Yeah.
He had a rough weekend last weekend. So good to see him get back and keep his home run lead over Blake Burke going. This little friendly competition we got going. Although right after he extended the lead, Burke got it right back to three. He's the other one, Blake Burke. Again, having another good weekend, helped anchor the Vols' offensive attack. Even in the game two that you lost, Burke and Simo helped anchor that attack. So good to see those two get back going and come off a bad weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think after, a midweek hiccup like he did against Lipscomb, we were even talking about it on Tuesday about how this should not be that big of a deal for the Vols, and apparently it was. So I think for them to come out, especially on Saturday, to have as hot of bats as they did, that was a huge pickup from that, especially to keep up with the great pitching outing that we had. Dawson, you were hitting on it. The big inning is still a weapon for this team. I think, we've seen throughout the year where they'll put across five or more runs just like that, just in the click of a click of a button, for lack of better terms, but still being able to put up runs in droves like that is going to be huge for this team, especially when it feels like there's some drought sometimes. Like I know against Missouri in some of those 3-2 games, it felt like the offense couldn't get rolling. If you can get one of those spells in the right moment, I mean, this team is really going to look unstoppable. Dawson, you hit on it. Moore and Burke still getting more home runs has been huge. The bottom of the lineup with Dean Curley still being down there, being able to provide some really big-time hits. He had a great weekend at the plate, I think. And another guy that's been a little bit more consistent since coming back, Billy Amick. I mean, he hit one of the longest balls of the season on Friday night during the doubleheader. And, him being able to get on base and provide opportunities for the rest of the lineup, I think it's been huge rolling forward as well.
Yeah, moving over to the pitching staff now, because something we covered on Thursday and Friday was how talented this Florida group is. Their record doesn't show it, but they do have a lot of talent on this roster, and they've underperformed this season. So you never know when a team like this could get going, and sometimes it'd be in an SEC East rivalry with Tennessee at home. But the Vols pitching staff was able to fend that off and had a really good weekend. How was the pitching staff able to fend off and not allow a very talented roster in Florida to get going?
Well, they didn't get into a ton of bad situations, first off. There were certain points in the weekend they got in a jam, but it wasn't often, it didn't feel like. There was a few times, for example, a lot of Florida's damage was done via the home run, it felt like. Ty Evans, a two-run homer on Saturday. A couple of homers on Friday, a homer in game two. That's kind of where they did most of their damage. It was never, all right, now they've had five, six, seven guys come to the plate. They're scoring five runs. It was always, okay, they got one guy on, homer, inning over. That was all the damage they did. The staff was, for the most part, able to limit the base runners. When they did get in a jam, either Vitello went to the right guy, or the guy that was in the jam was just able to get out of it, was able to throw a couple great pitches. For example, game one, when we were in here watching game one, Cannell comes in with two guys on, nobody out, and gets the three-out save, gets it in quick fashion, by the way, and gets out of that situation with Caglione looming and the tying run looming. He comes in and gives you three big outs and gets out of the inning and wins you the game. So, you know, for the most part, even when they did get in a jam, they were able to find a way out of it with some really clutch pitching. And then you mentioned it earlier, you limited their guys that can do the most damage. Jack Caglione was a factor at times, but it never felt like he was a game changer.
No.
Never felt like he was that takeover player, which he is and has been all year.
Yeah.
And Ty Evans as well. Now, he had a home run on Saturday, but again, you go on to win the game, what, 16-3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So his damage is pretty limited. And really, for the weekend, you didn't allow a ton of damage, and we talked about it before the series. The rest of their lineup just is not doing very well.
Yeah.
If you can limit those two guys, you limit the damage, and that's what the pitching did.
Yeah, the big one here was, you know, being able to pitch around Caglione. You really put him in some really sticky situations. There were a couple of strikeouts that he had that he was, of course, frustrated with. But, you know, from an outside perspective, I mean, you know, being able to, you know, set a guy down like that who's like leading his team in the offense with the home run category and, you know, being a Golden Spikes type player, being able to shut him down was huge. And like you said, Dawson, being able to limit some of, I guess, the side pieces to go along with them. I know you said they had four guys sitting in double-digit home runs. Being able to limit their production was huge. And I like how they switched up the looks that they gave him. I know one of the longer outings this weekend was by A.J. Causa. He threw five shutout innings on Friday. He was really, really solid during that first game on Friday. But outside of that, you know, not a ton of production from the guys that weren't named Caglione or Evans. And you outscore this Florida team in one inning in your Saturday game. You outscore them for the entire weekend. So I think being able to keep them at bay by changing the looks, you know, not giving up walks like this team has sometimes been known to do, give up some free bases, being able to limit that was really able to, you know, set this team apart this weekend.
Yeah. 865-288-3131 talking about the Vols series clinching win over Florida on Saturday. I'm about to head to the phones here in a second, but before we do, the Vols are now tied with Arkansas for one game back in the SEC standings. Today, D1 Baseball released their updated top 25, and Tennessee is now the number one team in the nation. I'll kind of throw in a two-punch here. Do they deserve to be the number one team? And looking at the remaining schedule, do you think Tennessee has the opportunity to win the SEC crown?
Well, I think, you know, the slightest slip up can lose you those top two spots. So Texas A&M, Arkansas go into the weekend as 1-2, both lose their series.
Yes.
And A&M to an LSU team that obviously Tennessee had the upper hand on, and then Arkansas to a Kentucky team that Tennessee just beat in a series a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I think that factored into it. And I say yes, I think they're the most talented team in the country. Now, have they been playing like it at times this year? Not really. I wondered if they were going to punish Tennessee for its midweek loss. Clearly not. Clearly they value the Florida series win on the road more so than that. Can they capture the regular season crown? Yes. I think Arkansas losing 2 out of 3 to Kentucky helps you. You got to take care of your own business. Tough series against Vandy this weekend. That's still a rival. Now, they did get swept by Georgia.
Yeah.
That was an ugly series,
very,
by the way.
Yeah.
But it's still an in-state rival. You can't take anybody for granted. And then you got at South Carolina, a team that was top 10 at one point. They're not now. Still a talented ball club. So the first off is take care of your own business. Go get 4-6 wins. Kentucky is at Florida, ironically enough, and then at Vanderbilt. Arkansas is home against Mississippi State at A&M. A&M is at Ole Miss, home against Arkansas. That A&M-Arkansas series is probably who finishes second in the SEC or third. If Kentucky were to finish second, I imagine, you know, it would be that for third. So tough schedules left for them, but you have to take care of your own business. Tennessee would get the tiebreaker against Kentucky. Not sure about Arkansas, though.
Yeah, I'd put it at probably a 25% chance that they win the regular season. I think, you know, the battle between A&M and Arkansas to end out the regular season is really going to help them out. But like you said, Dawson, you really got to take care of business. I think you need to get at least 2 out of 3 in each of these next two series because, you know, getting an in-state team like Vandy, who's really been slipping as of late, they have not looked the same that they did early in this season where they were ranked up in the top 5, really started to slip down, and they really let Charlie Condon and the Bulldogs really just punish them over in Athens. And then you get South Carolina team that's been a little up and down, but still a top 15, top 20 group there. I think being able to take two out of three from them is going to be huge in that department. You are going to need a little bit of help from Florida and Vandy to take over Kentucky just because of their style of play. It's a little bit different. And, you know, you're going to need some big-time outings with Mississippi State over against Arkansas, and the same with Ole Miss against A&M. I think if you know, things roll the right way there, I think you're able to move up or move down a couple spots. I think you can finish as high as one, as low as four at this point. But, you know, outside of that, I think they do deserve the number one seed in the country right now. I think outside of that midweek loss, which is the first of the year, many teams have already lost several times beyond that. So I think, you know, D1 or whoever's voting on that, being able to overlook that is probably the right move. Teams lose in the midweek. It's baseball. Things happen. But overall production over, I guess, the SEC season so far this year, I think it's really been, you know, night and day between, you know, many other teams in the SEC and Tennessee.
Going to need some help for sure. Kind of similar to how the SEC basketball season ended. Right?
Exactly.
Yes. You know, we were kind of in this situation, you know, the 2 or 3 weeks leading up to the end of the regular season of basketball.
Exactly.
You had the opportunity. You need a little bit of help. Tennessee was able to get some help. Let's hope we can get it again in baseball. Mm-hmm. Let's head to the phones. We've got Joshy Boy on the line. What's up, Joshy?
What's up, guys?
How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, did you?
We did.
Good. Well, I'm glad we're number one in the country, but I hope we're not the number one overall seed in the Big Dance.
Yeah, that is a pretty I mean, it's a good thing, yeah. But it's kind of a cursed thing.
It's, yeah.
And the last number one team to win it all was like the 90-something Miami team.
Miami in 99, I think, 97?
Something like that, something, yeah. Like that. Around the swing of the millennium.
Yeah. So the top eight teams get to host the regional in a super, correct?
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. So, if we somehow finish the season out, let's say 5 SEC wins out of the 6 and win 2 or 3 in Hoover, what do you guys think?
If we're number one, if we're number one headed into Hoover and we win 3 games in Hoover, we're probably the number one overall seed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you'll be top if you win 5 out of 6. And win, you know, 2 games, 3 games in Hoover, I think you're definitely one of at least the top eight, and you'll host, you know, both a normal regional and a super.
I'm hearing, guys, A.J. Russell could be throwing a bullpen game, the South Carolina game, maybe. That's what I heard.
Yes. What we've been told, he has started pitching again, started throwing again, that is, in practice, and he is aiming to return for the South Carolina series, most likely as a reliever, is what we've heard.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, a really good series against Florida, taking 2 out of 3. The first game Friday was huge.
Yeah.
The second game, the offense really didn't look too bad in game 2. They just lose some chances with runners on base being left on. And the third game, a really explosive 6th inning. I really enjoyed that Saturday.
Yeah, that was fun.
Hunter Ansley stepped up big.
Yeah.
He did. You know, a huge outing for him. 3 different hits that brought in runs. So, and then add that to an 11-run 6th inning. I mean, that's very, very impressive, especially on the road in a series-clinching win.
Yeah. Okay, switching to NBA, do you guys think if Denver does lose tonight, the series is probably over?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's over knowing how talented this Denver team is, but, you know, you don't win a game at home. I think it's very daunting. I expect them to bounce back tonight and win. I thought they had a really bad start to game 1. Just kind of sloppy. Jokic again with 6+ turnovers in back-to-back games now. And a little bit of that's probably, you know, Rudy Gobert, but I think also, you know, Denver just kind of needs to settle back in and realize, okay, look, you know, this is a legit team. in Minnesota that matches up well with us.
Yeah.
We've got to go back to playing our best basketball, which they really didn't do against the Lakers. But this team is way too talented to not win at least one out of the first two.
I still have them losing the series, though, in six or seven.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I still say Denver.
But, William, you know what? This Minnesota team, they kind of remind me of that bubble Lakers team where they have three decent big men that can rotate on Jokic and just tire him out, you know?
Yeah, look,
Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, you know, I think Rudy Gobert has a lot at stake in these playoffs because I think he's kind of been known as the guy that wins the Defensive Player of the Year, but come playoff time, just is kind of a liability. And you know, he was really good defensively on Saturday. Karl Anthony Towns had a big second half. Naz Reid had a huge second half. You know, 14 points in the third quarter. I don't know if I'd compare him to the Lakers in the bubble, but I do think this team is talented.
Yeah. So what do you guys think about this Knicks-Pacers series? I think Pacers could win the series maybe in six or seven games. I think they're a really underrated team.
It's going to be a fun one to watch, I can tell you that.
Yeah, it'd definitely be a fun one. I think it comes down to how does Indiana defend Jalen Brunson? Because Indiana's not a good defensive team, but they're one of the best offenses in the league. So how do they defend Jalen Brunson, I think, is what it comes down to. And, you know, I think – They've got all the pieces to beat the Knicks. I still think the Knicks are the better team. I kind of want them to win because I'd love a Boston New York series for the Eastern Conference Finals. But I think it comes down to how they defend Brunson if they're able to stop him.
Yeah, William, you know what I'm going to have to do to get back at Marcus and Brett for laughing at me when I said Nico is a lot better than Shador Sanders.
What are you going to have to do?
I'm going to have to take Colorado under their win total again this year, under 5.5.
5.5? Yeah, I mean.
That's really low.
New conference?
Yeah.
Well, new conference.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, also, they don't, I mean, outside of Sanders and Hunter, you know, their roster is kind of bare. I think Dallin Hayden will have a lot of success, but, you know.
Me too.
Depends on how good that offensive line is.
Yeah, if they haven't fixed it, it could be big problems like last season.
Yeah, I agree.
So tonight I'm going to go with Pacers in game one, and I'm going to go with Denver to tie the series up tonight. Y'all have a good night.
All right, good deal. Thank you so much for calling in, Joshy. I like both of those. I might lean Knicks, but we'll dive into that as we continue on here on Overtime. When we come back, we'll head back to the phones and talk about the Mile High Meltdown. Denver falls in game one to Minnesota.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
White Claw is taking hard seltzer to new heights with White Claw Surge. At 8% alcohol, White Claw Surge is a stronger wave of refreshment that doesn't compromise on taste. Available in four bold waves of flavor like ripe blackberry, citrusy blood orange, zesty natural lime, and tart cranberry. Check out your favorite retailer in-store and online for the White Claw Surge Variety 12-pack and 16-ounce single-serve cans. White Claw Surge. Please drink responsibly.
Life is more fun with a Good Life checking account, offering extra benefits including bank travel. Join us for a trip to Mackinac Island for a stay at the beautiful Grand Hotel. Travel with us to southern Utah to witness the enormous, colorful, and unusual rock formations. Or join us on one of our many day trips. We're always on the go.
Citizens National Bank. Banking banking never felt so good.
Member FDIC.
Van Run Radio is proud to present the 37 Club, an exclusive community of the lifeblood of Van Run Radio. You, our biggest supporters. With a membership to the 37 Club, you receive exclusive content like podcasts, blogs, and videos, giveaways, and access to exclusive merchandise and events. So join the 37 Club today by going to fanrunradio.com.
Who's ready to watch your Southern League champs take the field for a fantastic 2024 season? All season long, your favorite nights are back, like Star Wars, Margaritaville, 4th of July, UT Night, and so much more. And don't forget, awesome daily promotions too, like All You Can Eat Wednesday, Thirsty Thursday, Summer Fireworks Series, and Family Fun Day Sunday. Get your tickets for your favorite night now at SmokiesBaseball.com.
All right, back here on Overtime on a Monday. We appreciate you joining us. Great conversation in the first segment about Tennessee swamping Florida in Gainesville this weekend. We head back to the phones, 865-288-3131. Your number if you want to hop in and join. We've got Tanner on the line. What's up, Tanner?
Jason, Will, how y'all doing?
Doing well, man. How are you?
Doing well. So I know, me and Jace are big Lakers guys. You somewhat, I guess, after – the Grizzlies, of course, your main allegiance. But so I think as far as the Darvin Ham thing went, it's a move that we kind of had to make.
Sure.
But I wanted to get y'all's thoughts on his performance in these playoffs and this whole season, really, and if you thought it was a good move or not.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to coaching firings, you know, a lot of media puppets will be like, look, at the end of the year, if it's a bad year, they'll say, fire the coach, right? And sometimes, you know, I don't always agree with that, but in this instance, I do. What I think lost Darvin Ham the job was his lineups, was his in-game adjustments, and was his game management. For example, in game two, throughout a lineup going into the fourth quarter of Torian Prince, Spencer Dinwiddie, Jackson Hayes, guys that hadn't played in a lineup together all season long. And you're throwing them into a fourth quarter situation where you are back and forth with the team that knocked you out last year and the NBA champions. So that was an example. Also, in I think January, when the Lakers had like a 13-game skid, Darvin Ham had six different starting lineups in 13 games, which screamed to me lack confidence in himself and lack confidence in, you know, what he was putting out there. He didn't know what he was doing. So that's an example. And then in terms of the in-game management and adjustments, you know, game one, Rui Hachimura was on Jokic for a majority of the game, and you never thought to yourself, okay, well, Jokic has, you know, 30 points. Maybe we should make an adjustment there and put AD on him and see where we can move Rui. You know, in-game adjustments. Mike Malone does a great job of that. The coaching battle was lost in this series. And when I talk about game management, it's the fact that in game five, it's 67-58 in the third quarter. And before Darvin Ham decides to call a timeout, it's 74-71 Nuggets. He failed to adequately call timeouts to stop momentum. He failed to have appropriate in-game adjustments, and his lineups were always all over the place. I just think overall he lost the locker room and lost the trust of, okay, this coach knows what he's doing. And anytime you lose that, you lose a coach, and I think it was the right decision.
How about you, Jace?
Yeah, I think overall, I think him sort of, like William was saying, sort of misusing the depth that you have there. I think it was a huge mistake. I know because, you know, up and down during the regular season, D'Angelo Russell, there'd be some nights where he'd pop off and then some nights where, you know, it was a dud. And towards the end of the season, he was able to turn that around. But just working around that with some of the secondary pieces, such as like a Torian Prince or a Cam Reddish when he was healthy, just many decisions did not go that well. It felt like he lacked a little bit of confidence. confidence in what he was doing sometimes, because, you know, with that amount of talent and, you know, depth and experience that you have, even the addition of Spencer Dinwiddie should have at least made it a little bit easier on in who you want to lean on. Just didn't feel like the confidence was there in the decision-making sort of things. And as William was saying, the in-game management was not the best. Putting together some odd lineups, not knowing, you know, when momentum is shifting, even after, you know, being an assistant coach in the league for so long and being a player in the league, you know when momentum shifts, and it really didn't feel like he had a grasp on when he should change personnel, when he should change play calls. It all felt like a mess from the start, and it feels like him jumping into this job, his first head coaching job in LA, could have been, you know, a lights too bright situation. You're surrounded by all these great pieces, and you just really aren't able to put it together the right way. I think the pressure might have gotten to him as well.
I agree. I think the most glaring – I mean, I think he was thoroughly outcoached by Malone, yes, not just this year but last year too.
Mm-hmm.
And the most glaring thing, like Will said, I think game five – I mean, this happened multiple times. But
yes,
you have, I think, a nine-point lead, and then you don't call a timeout until the lead is gone. And in my opinion, you just lost the game with a decision like that.
Yeah.
And I think it was game two when AD was – I mean, he couldn't miss. He was like 12 of 14 or something, and then in the fourth quarter – he stands in the corner.
Yeah. Well, and also, Tanner, you know, having your best player or one of your best players and Anthony Davis come out after a game and say that sometimes we have no idea what we're doing offensively or defensively, that immediately strikes a red flag with me in the fact that, okay, the Lakers leader, your head coach, is putting out a group that doesn't know what they're doing in the biggest series and biggest games of the year. That's a red flag. And look, I like Darvin Ham the person, but I think he was not equipped to be the Los Angeles Lakers head coach yet.
Yeah, that was beyond a red flag. And then his response to AD saying that is just that he disagrees with him. I thought that was pretty special.
If I were him, you know.
Yeah, and then, I mean, I pretty much agree with everything else said. And then quickly before I go, I wanted to get y'all's thoughts on OKC and Dallas. How do y'all think that series is going to go? Who do you lean towards?
Yeah, you know, that's an intriguing series. I think the Thunder are just a little too young, and I like the depth that the Mavericks have. Now, Max Kleba missing this series, I think, is a lot bigger deal than a lot of people are talking about, because even in that Clippers series in the final two games, him stretching out the floor to allow Kyrie and Luka to drive inside and have a lot more control of the floor results in the Mavericks having a lot more free-flowing offense. That's why when P.J. Washington was hitting his shots and Derrick Jones Jr. were hitting their shots, the Mavericks had a really good offense, and that's why they were head-over-heels better than the Clippers in the final three games. So when I look at this series, I think the battle's going to be down low. Chet Holmgren, obviously, is this long, lanky unicorn, but the Thunder have struggled on the offensive glass all year long. So if Gafford and the remaining guys on that Mavericks roster down low are able to win the rebound advantage, I think that gives them a significant advantage. Now it kind of comes down to the complementary pieces of the Thunder, who are really young, and the complementary pieces of the Mavericks, who have the experience and have had moments in the playoffs before. I lean Mavericks in this one. Guys, anything to add?
Nah.
No, I think I also am leaning the Mavs here. I think their experience with, you know, guys like Luka, who's been able to show up in the playoffs, you know, Kyrie's been a big deal. I think Kleba still being out, I mean, he was very efficient in those last two games. I think one of the games he shot perfect from the field and dropped in like 12, 15 points. So him being out is a big deal. But, you know, still with, you know, some of the pieces that they added in P.J. Washington, he hasn't been, you know, the biggest offensive threat in the playoffs, but I think he'll come around eventually. I think him being a third wheel to that carousel, it should start rolling for the Mavs.
Tanner, what do you think?
I think I lean towards Dallas. I've kind of gotten the vibe from OKC lately. I mean, don't get me wrong, great young team, great future. That, I mean, just kind of the stuff in the post-game interviews, that they kind of come across as a team that's about to be humbled. And if it's not by Dallas, you know, it'll be by Minnesota or it'll be by Denver.
Yeah.
But well, I do kind of hope Dallas wins and kind of lean towards Dallas.
Yeah, the Thunder remind me a lot of the Grizzlies from a couple of years ago, a young team that's overachieved, and they match up in the first round with a team. In the Grizzlies' instance, it was the Timberwolves when they were still trying to figure it out. For the Thunder's case, they play the Galveston Pelicans. So, you know, obviously, you know, the Pelicans have a lot to work on. And – and the Thunder just are the better defensive team, the better offensive team. They were able to cruise through it. But I just think experience is really big come playoff time, and I think it's a young team like this can win a series, but as you move on and the stakes rise, I think the younger teams cramp up a little bit. I expect the Mavericks to win the series.
Yeah, back to your Grizzlies comparison, I guess all that the Thunder need to do to truly become the Grizzlies would be for Lou Dort or something to call Luka fat or something like that.
Well, I don't know if that would be the case. But and Dylan Brooks is now playing for the Rockets, so there's no more Dylan Brooks grays.
Yeah, that's the least of their problems now, I guess.
Yeah, it is. Well, Tanner, we appreciate you calling in, man.
Of course. I'll see y'all later.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's head back to the association where we had a little bit of a mile-high meltdown on Saturday. The most impressive part about the run to last year's NBA championship is how little the Denver Nuggets allowed themselves to be tested. They never trailed in a series. They were tied twice, once in the second round against the Phoenix Suns and once in the finals when they lost game two to the Miami Heat. But in both instances, the Nuggets were the better team, and many truly thought they were in danger of losing – or not many, excuse me, ever thought they were in truly danger of losing the series in 20 playoff games. Denver went 16-4 to win a championship. The Nuggets last year were a juggernaut. The Nuggets defending their title this year is certainly within reach and certainly the expectation, but Saturday was a sobering performance that kind of reminds you that, you know, no team is unbeatable. Saturday night, the Nuggets lost 106-99 to Minnesota at Ball Arena. Losing game one of a Western Conference semifinal is hardly a death knell. And for a Nuggets team that has, you know, pride itself on resiliency and you know, being able to win games despite the how intense the moment is, you know, just look at the Lakers series when they trail for 75% of the games. This looks like it's just the beginning of the series, and that's how they think as well. But it does scream. With a performance like Anthony Edwards gave on Saturday, 43 points, 17 of 29 shooting, a really big night for him. Is Denver in trouble, and can Denver stop Ant? I don't think Denver is in trouble. I just think they got off to a really bad start, and Minnesota was able to kind of carry their way through the game. Naz Reid coming off the bench and putting up 14 points in the third quarter definitely hurt them. I just think, you know, Anthony Edwards is most likely not going to have 43 every night on a very efficient 17-29 shooting. So I think, as we talked about with Joshy, the Nuggets need to settle back in, realize, okay, yeah, you know, we're the hunted team now, right? But we still got to play our best basketball at home, and I think that's getting Jamal Murray to be a little bit more efficient, Jokic to get back into the swing of things, and everything else will fall from there, like we saw in the Lakers series. I think this Timberwolves team is just better through four quarters than the Lakers are. So they were able to finish out the game as opposed to the Lakers, you know, third quarter and it all starts going downhill. Mm. They've got to find a way to stop Ant, because I thought Kentavious Caldwell-Pope would be a good matchup, and it didn't seem to be that way. You could throw Michael Porter Jr. at him. That would give him a ton of length, but he's not able to stay in front as good of as a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. But they've got to hammer that down, because if Ant has performances like these over and over again, the Nuggets will be in trouble.
Denver's not in trouble yet. Bound to happen eventually. They were going to trail in a series. I mean, it's unrealistic to say they'd go two straight years and defend a championship not trailing in a series. Mm-hmm. Too much parity in the NBA for that. Sure, it's a setback, not a death blow, like you said. They'll adjust. The best players in the NBA, the best coaches in the NBA, they adjust. You know, they come back stronger in game two. Minnesota threw their best punch.
Yeah.
Just like the Lakers did in game one of the first round series, the Lakers just couldn't close for all 48 minutes. Mm. Minnesota threw their best punch. They're going to get Denver's best counterpunch in game two. They will adjust. Think of it this way. Denver got Minnesota's absolute best first punch in game one and only lost by 7 points.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not a blowout win. I mean, that's despite 43 from Ant, 20 from Towns, and 16 from Naz Reid, including 14 in the third quarter.
Yeah.
Compounded with Jamal Murray was off. He only had 17 points. Jokic was good but not great.
Mm.
And they had very limited other supporting cast help. I mean, everybody else was in single figures.
Yeah.
That's not a normal night for Denver by any means. And, you know, that's a feat. To still only lose by 7 when all that mm-hmm. stuff happens around you, that's a feat. They're not in trouble yet.
Yeah,
yeah. I also don't think they're in full trouble. I think they need to be a little bit wary about it. I don't think that they can, you know, go out there and have that same performance. I think that's one thing that they're going to take into account. And, you know, after a lot of home dominance, it felt like over these last two playoffs. I mean, they didn't lose at home against the Lakers this year. Only lost, it felt like maybe one or two games last postseason, one of them being a finals game at that. So, you know, beyond that, you know, it's a quick hit, like you said, for Minnesota, but, you know, it's an easy one to I guess, claw back from. You know, Kat, Gobert, and Naz Reid were just, you know, ruthless on the interior. Jokic said that he might have to clone himself to try and stop that, but, you know, rolling over, you know, with Coach Malone and everything that they've been able to do in-game adjustment-wise, I think out of game they're going to be just fine. And now for as if Denver can stop Anthony Edwards, I am not sure. I mean, like you said, KCP thought, you know, might be a good matchup with how quick he's been. But beyond that, you don't really want to throw some slow, lanky guy out there. You definitely don't want to throw any of your four or five on him. I mean, you're really stretching it with Michael Porter Jr. or Aaron Gordon there. So you're really going to have to rely on Jamal Murray to stop him. But, you know, that being the answer, that's not even a temporary stoppage to that.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we'll give our best bets of the night and continue talking about this Timberwolves-Nuggets series when we return on Overtime.
Looking for a luxury RV getaway? Then come see Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Just imagine a personal oasis on the French Broad River with outstanding amenities just minutes from the Great Smoky Mountains. Enjoy the quiet, private setting on sites offering unexpected beauty and tranquility. Unplug from everyday life and plug in to the serenity of life on the river, big mountain skies, and bucket list sunsets at Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Serenity in the heart of it all. Visit tworiversrvresort.com.
At First Bank, we're proud of more than 100 years of financial strength. But on game days, our numbers look even better. When they're lighting up a scoreboard, printed on a jersey, or in bold type on the sports page. We know there's strength in numbers, and nothing stronger than the bonds formed around local teams. And the return on this investment? Neighbors coming together again year after year. Bank where community is number one. First Bank. Bank local. Get more team spirit. Member FDIC.
It's baseball season, meaning summer's just around the corner, and your friends at Fan Run Radio are here to help you kick off summer right at the ballpark. Join us for our first ever Fan Run Night at Smoky Stadium on May 30th. Besides the game with Chattanooga, there'll be in-game activities, $3 beers for Thirsty Thursday, and you'll get to do it all with the Fan Run team. Also, 37 club members get free admission to the game. So keep it locked in on Fan Run Radio for more details to follow and save the date for May 30th.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can. But it's just as important to take time for yourself. AARP can help. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
All right, back here on Overtime. Time for our best bets of the day. Rolling into some Drake music. Tough weekend for him. I'm still Team Drake, by the way. But
really?
Look, yes. I will always be Team Drake. I mean, I think.
What did he do to warrant that loyalty?
Well, first off, I like him. I like his music. I've also met the guy.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, I don't know. I think a lot what Kendrick's saying isn't necessarily true either. I think he's kind of stretching it, but probably both of them are. But
it's rap beef.
It tends to happen the longer these things go.
Also, I kind of think I'm kind of over it now. I think they've put out too much to where it's kind of like watered down.
Too much too quickly. Anyway.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like, I haven't even listened to it.
I haven't gotten around to much of it either, but
I liked what Drake put out this weekend, but then Kendrick followed that up 6 minutes later and then put out another one yesterday, and then Drake put another one out yesterday. I'm just like, dude, that's too much.
It's too much music.
That man. With yeah. like the free beat going around with Metro Boomin.
Yeah, that's hilarious,
yeah,
by the way.
It's so great. Anyway, well, at least we're not Drake or Kendrick Lamar. Let's hope to be we can make maybe a shell of what they make on a yearly average with our best bets tonight, however. And I'll begin with the Nuggets -6.5 tonight. Top two seeds at home in game two after a loss are 48-11 straight up and 37-21 against the spread, and then 14-3 straight up and against the spread since 2018 and 19. again, like we talked about with Josh and like we talked about a second ago, I think the Nuggets settle back in tonight. They're the better team playing at home where they've had a lot of success. I imagine they bounce back tonight in an emphatic way.
I'm back on these spread total parlays here, the over-under spread parlays, because they give you a little bit of added value. So I'm going Nuggets minus 5.5 and under 207.5. This game went under 207.5 the other day. This series feels like a defensive slugfest with how the interior play was for Minnesota, with how the interior play can be for Denver. It feels like Denver's going to counterpunch tonight, come back a little bit more tightened up on the defensive end especially. They're due for a big night from the Jokic-Murray tandem. And I feel like Ant, great performance in game one, but I feel like he comes back to earth a little bit tonight. So I like Nuggets minus 5.5 parlayed with under 207.5.
All right.
I found Denver at minus 6.5. I'll roll with 5.5 if you can find it there. You know, like we were talking about, it was a great first punch for Minnesota. I think the Nuggets get right back to them. I think Jokic and Murray finally, you know, find their bread and butter back once again. Didn't really see, you know, that being an overwhelming factor. I think they get that back tonight, get a little bit more production from their role players. I think they take it to the Wolves tonight.
Did I say 5.5? I meant to say 6.5 if I did.
You said 6.5. I found it at 5.5 on FanDuel.
Oh, okay.
If you can find it at 5.5, take it. Okay. I'm taking it at 6.5 as well.
All right, my second best bet of the night is Knicks team total over 111.5. William, why? The Pacers are not a good defensive team. The Pacers play back and forth offensive performances. The Knicks are at home. I expect this to be a game that's in the 120s. I think this is a pretty easy total to cover here. You could go the overall over if you want to as well, but I think the Knicks end up winning this game with more offense and just how the Pacers play. I think the speed and the tempo is going to be a lot higher than it was in that Sixers series where it's a lot of setting up in the half court for Philadelphia. I think the Knicks win the game tonight, and I think they'll go over the team total 111.5.
I think the Knicks win too, but I don't think they cover. So I'm going Pacers plus 6.5, parlayed with over 209.5. This game's going to go over. A ton of good scores in this game, in this series. And especially, like you said, the tempo is going to be a lot faster in this series than it was in the Knicks' first round series. So, you know, with guys Brunson, Siakam, Halliburton, Turner, Hart, Ananobi all on the floor, all really at the same time, This is going to be a high-scoring, wild back-and-forth series. So, but I do like the Pacers to at least make this one scrappy, just like Philadelphia did on the road in Game 1 in the first round. So Pacers plus 6.5 over 209.5 for me.
Yeah, I've got a little two-leg parlay to round it out for me. I've got Pascal Siakam for 20-plus, and I'm pairing that with Pacers plus 5.5. If you can still find it at plus 6.5 like Dawson just
FanDuel,
had it.
FanDuel, baby, I'm telling you.
I tried it on FanDuel. It gave me 5.5. It's ridiculous.
Gave me 6.5 earlier.
How early are you doing this?
I don't know, 4:30, I think.
I guess I did it too early. I did mine at about 3:30, but still, you know, I think it'll be a close game at MSG. I think, like y'all have said, the high pace of offense on both ends is going to be a lot of fun to keep up with. But I think the Pacers keep it close, kind of like the Sixers did. But I think the Knicks still have a really good chance if they can keep Brunson on a high horse here.
All right, any more best bets for you guys?
That's it tonight.
Nope.
All right, those are our best bets of the night. I guess we got about a minute here coming up. All right, we'll do real quick our predictions for the series. Just give me the winner. I think the Knicks win the series, and I think the Nuggets win the series. Obviously, they've already played one game. But Knicks-Pacers starting tonight, I'll take the Knicks to win the series. I'll take the Nuggets to win the series.
Knicks probably in 7 and Nuggets in probably 6 if they win tonight. If they don't, it'll be 7.
I'm going to roll with – I think the Nuggets could push that one to – or I think the T-Wolves can push it to 7, but I think the Nuggets take it. And I'm going to roll a little, you know, off-kilter here. I'm going to roll with the Pacers in 6 with that offense.
Pacers in 6. All right, getting it done
quick.
Scream it. All right, when we come back, we'll continue to cover the association, a couple of results from the weekend, and we'll have In the News with Dawson Wise when we return on Overtime.